And during this administration, we had several meetings with Mr. Pashinyan. In these meetings, especially in this particular meeting, the focus of the negotiations was the development of commercial, economic, and security relations between the two countries.
Expressing satisfaction with the growing trends of relations between the two countries, Raisi pointed to the diverse and numerous capacities available in Iran and Armenia, calling for an all-out effort to improve the level of relations and expand bilateral cooperation. The Iranian president pointed to energy cooperation as one of the capacities available to improve the level of relations between the two countries, saying, "The Islamic Republic is ready to expand cooperation in other economic and commercial areas, including in increasing the export of technical and engineering services." Also noting that the Caucasus region is a part of Iran's history, civilization, and culture, Raisi underscored that security and peace in the Caucasus region are very important for Iran. The Iranian president added that negotiations with Pashinyan led to the conclusion that resolving the issues of the region must occur at the hands of officials and authorities of the region, and any interference by foreigners will only create problems rather than solve them. Pashinyan, for his part, appreciated the constructive role of the Islamic Republic in the region and stressed that Iran's efforts have always been aimed at stabilizing and strengthening peace and security in the region. Pashinyan expressed gratitude for the priority given by Raisi's administration to the development of ties with the neighboring countries. The Armenian premier also called for strengthening transit cooperation between the two countries to connect the Black Sea to the Persian Gulf. Iran opened a consulate in the southern Armenian city of Kapan on October 21st, nearly a year after expressing interest in doing so. Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian officially inaugurated the consulate. At the opening ceremony, Amir Abdollahian stated that the security of Armenia and the region is Iran's security. He called for the development of north-south transportation corridor through Armenia. He also said Tehran's policies to respect territorial integrity as well as internationally recognized borders. Tehran had previously stated that changes in its borders and transit links with Armenia would be a red line that it would not tolerate being crossed. That's when Turkey and Azerbaijan have been planning to establish a new transport link called the Zangzur Corridor. In case of opening, it will affect Iran-Armenia commerce and could sever a major Iranian transit link with the South Caucasus. Meanwhile, Tehran has not contented itself with only diplomatic messages. The inauguration of the Kapan Consulate came after several days of large-scale military exercises by IRGC near Iran's borders with Azerbaijan. The latest simultaneous diplomatic and defensive moves clearly show the Iranian government is ready to defend its national interests in all seriousness.
The last savior.
Oh, the savior of mankind, please show us a sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah.
You are a true God.
To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. This is The Last Savior. I'm your host, Zainab. In this program, we provide you with the information regarding the Imam of Time, which is necessary because on that day, which is the Day of Judgment, we will be recognized by the Imam of our time. Today in our studio, we have with us our guest speaker, Dr. Karimi. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Karim, in our previous episodes, we have been discussing about the certain and uncertain signs of reappearance. And one of the signs that we named was the Yamani, which according to some narrations is a certain sign, but there's still some doubt. Is it a certain sign or an uncertain sign?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Before answering your question, let me refer to one important point. The belief in Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is one of the necessary beliefs.
Okay.
And there are some of the details which are, certain. But when it comes to some details about Imam Mahdi, his reappearance, his signs of reappearance, it is not necessary for each Muslim, for each Shia to come to a final conclusion about a belief. My point is that, yes, we will be asked about who your God is, who your prophet is, who are your imams, about the Day of Judgment. But are we going to ask, for example, in the grave, on the first night of the grave, that, what is your take on Yamani, whether he's one of the definite signs or uncertain signs? This is a scholarly discussion. Of course, it has many fruits to know whether it is one of the, and he is one of the certain signs or not. But my point is that, because the reason I mentioned the point is that we have some differences of ideas about the details, which are related to Imam Mahdi alayhi salam and his reappearance. And it is very normal to have such differences, because at the end of the day, we are dealing with some narrations. And some scholars believe in some of the narrations for some reasons, some reject some of the narrations for some reasons, and this is a scholarly discussion.
All right.
So we shouldn't think that, if we do not come to a final conclusion about one of the details related to Yamani, for example, then there is a problem in our beliefs. No, this is not the case.
All right.
Having said that, we said that the signs for the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and may Allah hasten his reappearance, are divided into two categories: definite ones, the certain ones, and the non-definite or uncertain ones.
Yeah.
The famous idea is that there are five definite signs for Imam Mahdi alayhi salam and his reappearance.
Yeah.
And Yamani is one of them. This is a very famous idea, and many scholars believe in that.
Yeah.
But today I would like to, shed some light on this viewpoint and to have another analysis of this viewpoint and refer to other group of scholars who believe that, no, Yamani cannot be considered as one of the definite signs.
Definite signs.
The point is that we have two narrations according to which Yamani is one of the hatmi, one of the mahtum, one of the definite signs for the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
All right.
One of them is quoted by Nu'mani in Kitab al-Ghiba from Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. The narration reads, "An-nida' min al-mahtum," a cry from the heaven, is one of the definite signs. "Was-Sufyani min al-mahtum," the next definite sign is Sufyani. "Wal-Yamani min al-mahtum," Yamani is another definite sign. "Waqatlu nafs al-zakiyya min al-mahtum," the murder of nafs al-zakiyya, the fact that nafs al-zakiyya would be killed, is one of the signs. We are not going to talk about the other signs mentioned in this narration. "Wakaffun yatla'u min al-sama' min al-mahtum," a palm which will appear on the heaven, is another definite sign. This is in Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, page 262, chapter 14, narration number 11.
Yeah. Well, we'll discuss more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop this thousand-year-old
Welcome back. This is The Last Savior. We're discussing about the certain and uncertain signs of reappearance. We have Dr. Karimi with us. Dr. Karimi, before going to the break, you said that you described a narration for us wherein you said you defined some of the certain signs and Yamani was one of them.
Yeah. Now, this is one of the narrations that the those scholars who believe in Yamani as one of the definite signs refer to. But the point is that we have two versions of this narration. In Kitab al-Ghiba, which is published after the correction of the late Ghaffari, we have Al-Yamani min al-Mahtum. But in Bihar al-Anwar, volume 52, page 233, chapter 25, hadith number 98, and Ithbat al-Huda, volume 3, page 735, they have quoted the same narration from Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, but in that version, Al-Yamani min al-Mahtum is missing.
Okay.
So in that version, we do not have this phrase.
All right.
And the other point is that there is a kind of, weakness in the chain of the narration. So we cannot argue with this narration to prove that Yaman is one of
the definite signs. Or a certain sign.
The second narration, which is also a very important narration in this regard, is quoted by Sheikh al-Saduq in Kamal al-Din, which is one of the very famous books on Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. He quotes from Umar ibn Hanzala, who quotes Imam Sadiq alayhi salam as saying, قَبْلَ قِيَامِ الْقَائِمِ خَمْسُ عَلَامَاتٍ مَحْتُومَاتٍ. There are five definite signs before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
Okay.
Yamani, Sufyani, Sayha, which is the cry, قَتْلُ النَّفْسَ الزَّكِيَّةِ, the murder of the nafs al-zakiyyah, وَالْخَسْفُ بِالْبَيْدَى, the fact that a group of people would be buried in a land called Bayda.
True.
This is in Kamal al-Din, page 650, chapter 58, hadith number 7.
All right.
Now, again, this is, one of the main narrations according to which Yamani is considered
a definite sign.
But again, the point is that the same narration has been quoted by Sheikh Kulaini in Al-Kafi, volume 8, page 310, and Nu'mani in Al-Ghiba, page 261, chapter 14, hadith number 9. And they also have quoted the narration from Umar ibn Hanzala, the same companion of the Imam, and he has quoted from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam.
Okay.
And there is a very important difference. In the book Kamal al-Din by Sheikh al-Saduq, we have قَبْلَ قِيَامِ الْقَائِمِ خَمْسُ عَلَامَاتٍ مَحْتُومَاتٍ. There are five definite signs
before the appearance
of Imam Mahdi. But in the books of Sheikh Kulaini, Al-Kafi and Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, the narration reads, قَبْلَ قِيَامِ الْقَائِمِ خَمْسُ عَلَامَاتٍ. There are five signs before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi. So the word mahtumat is not mentioned in the books Al-Kafi and Al-Ghiba by Al-Nu'mani.
Okay.
Now, the question is that we have a difference of the narration. In the book Kamal al-Din, the word mahtumat has been mentioned, which means that these are the definite signs.
Okay.
But in the books of Al-Kafi and Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, we have only the word khamsu alamat, five signs, without referring to them being mahtumat
without
or
naming.
Definite.
All right.
So which one should be preferred? Now, there is a kind of complicated discussion, but I would like to mention that because it would be of benefit, hopefully, for our dear listeners in other discussions on, which are related to hadith as well. So, which narration should be preferred over the other, خمسة علامات or خمسة علامات محتومات?
Okay.
As I mentioned, in Kamal al-Din, محتومات is mentioned. In Al-Kafi, محتومات is not mentioned. Of course, in this case, the narration of An-Nu'mani, we put it aside because the chain of the narration is not authentic. But chain of the narration of Al-Kafi is authentic. The chain of the narration of Kamal al-Din is also authentic.
All right.
So we have two authentic narrations, one in Kamal al-Din with Mahtumat and one in Al-Kafi without
the word Mahtumat. So what conclusion do we deduce from that? I'll ask you that after a short break.
Sure.
Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio. Welcome back. This is The Last Savior. I'm your host, Zainab. We have with us Dr. Karimi. We're discussing the definite or certain signs of reappearance. Dr. Karimi, before going to the break, you said that you quoted two narrations. And into the second narration you quoted from Umar ibn Hanzala, he quoted from Imam Sadiq. And the narration was a little authentic. It had no weak chain of narrations. It had no weak chain, but the word mahtumat, that means definite, the word definite was missing.
So in Kamal al-Din by Sheikh al-Saduq, we have five definite signs, khamsu alamat al-mahtumat. In Al-Kafi, we have khamsu alamat, five signs,
all
without
right.
them being definite or non-definite. Now, which narration should be preferred? And it has a very important conclusion in us coming to this conclusion whether Yamani is one of the definite signs or not. The first point is that I'm, of course, here referring to the viewpoint of the scholars who believe that Yamani is not one of the definite signs.
All right.
They believe that the chain of the narration of Al-Kafi, which is without Mahtumat, okay, is preferred over the chain of the narration of Kamaluddin. Because in the chain of the narration in Kamaluddin, we have a certain Husayn ibn Hasan ibn Abban, and he is not mentioned in the Rijali books of the earliest scholars, Shia scholars, except for Ibn Dawood. So the point is that the chain of the narration as mentioned in Al-Kafi is preferred over the chain of the narration in Kamaluddin.
All right.
This is the first point, which tells us that the chain of the narration in Al-Kafi, which is without Mahtumat,
the word Mahtumat
is preferred.
Is, all right.
The second one is in need of a bit details and explanation. There is a discussion in Usul al-Fiqh, in the principles of jurisprudence. We have two versions of narrations, one in Kamaluddin with Mahtumat and the other in Al-Kafi without Mahtumat. A group of scholars believe that the narration in Al-Kafi should be preferred,
all right,
which tell us that it is without Mahtumat. So
right,
Yamani is not one of the definite signs.
All right.
They have a couple of reasons. One of them is that the chain of the narration in Al-Kafi is better compared to the chain of the narration in Kamaluddin. They have two other arguments that I think we need to deal with them in the following session, inshallah.
All right, inshallah. So to sum it up, you said that we have some narrations which define definite and indefinite signs, or you discussed almost three narrations over here. In the first narration, you said Yamani is among the definite signs, but the chain of narrations was weak. And then you quoted a hadith wherein we had two different views, and in one of the hadiths, the word Mahtumat was missing, and most of the scholars believe that the one in which the word Mahtumat is missing, that means the word definite is missing, is preferred over the one in which the word definite is included. Thank you so much, Dr. Karimi, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
The United Kingdom is currently facing its largest outbreak of bird flu, with more than 200 confirmed cases so far. All poultry and captive birds in England have been placed under house arrest. We take a look at some of the British media's coverage of this story. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has more for us. Measures to keep all poultry and captive birds indoors in England to prevent the spread of bird flu have come into force. The national housing measures, which were announced last week and are being introduced from Monday, are aimed at preventing house birds from interacting with wild birds. It comes as the United Kingdom has been facing its largest outbreak of bird flu, with more than 200 cases confirmed on commercial premises, small holdings, and in pet birds since October of last year. The government said everyone must keep their birds inside regardless of the type of bird or numbers kept. They're also being urged to follow other biosecurity measures mandated by the Avian Influenza Prevention Zone at all times to protect their flock and prevent the risk of future outbreaks. These include cleansing and disinfecting footwear and clothing before and after contact with birds, reducing the movement of people onto the premises and storing bedding property so it does not get contaminated by wild birds. The government has warned owners that avian influenza could kill house birds if action is not taken. The new measures are being introduced after the disease was confirmed at over 90 premises and has been found in more than 200 dead wild birds since the start of October. Christine Middlemiss, chief veterinary officer, said, "Many poultry keepers in England have excellent biosecurity standards, but we know that one small mistake is all that it takes to introduce bird flu onto the premises and kill flocks. A housing order alone will not be enough to reduce infection rates. Implementing scrupulous biosecurity and separating flocks from wild birds remains the best form of defence. Whether you keep just a few birds or thousands of them, from today onwards they must be housed under cover to protect them from this highly infectious disease." Britain's Health Security Agency continues to advise that the risk of public health from the virus is very low. The Food Standards Agency advised that avian influenza pose a very low food safety risk for British consumers also remains unchanged. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story from a different angle. British poultry producers will be able to slaughter Christmas turkeys early, freeze and then defrost them, but still sell the meat as fresh as the country deals with its worst ever bird flu outbreak, the country's farm ministry announced on Friday. Retailers and suppliers had been calling on the British government to make such a move as they look to kill turkeys early to avoid the further spread of the virus through the poultry sector. A report in the industry magazine The Grocer said last week, Britain has faced its largest ever outbreak of avian flu with 200 confirmed cases in the last 12 months, leading to the culling of millions of birds. The measures mean that farmers who breed turkeys, geese or ducks for their meat will have the option of slaughtering their flocks early and to freeze these products, which can then be defrosted and sold to consumers between the period of 28th of November and 31st of December, the ministry said in a statement. Britain produces more than 11 million turkeys every year, of which just under two-thirds are consumed over the Christmas period. Farmers will also now be paid compensation from the outset of a planned cull rather than at the end, the ministry said. The British tabloid The Sun has also covered the same story. Britain is facing its biggest ever bird flu outbreak as all poultry in England have been placed into lockdown to stop the spread of the bug. Measures to keep all poultry and captive birds indoors to prevent the spread of bird flu have come into force. The national housing measures, which were announced last week, are being introduced from Monday and are aimed at preventing house birds from interacting with wild birds. It comes as Britain has been facing its largest outbreak of bird flu with more than 200 confirmed cases on commercial premises, small holdings and in pet birds since October of last year. The government said everyone must keep their birds inside regardless of the type of bird or the numbers kept. They're also being urged to follow the other biosecurity measures mandated by the avian influenza prevention zone at all times to protect their flock and prevent the risk of future outbreaks. These include cleansing and disinfecting footwear and clothing before and after contact with birds, reducing the movement of people onto the premises, and storing bedding properly so it does not get contaminated by wild birds. The British government has warned owners that avian influenza could kill housebirds if action is not taken. The new measures are being introduced after the disease was confirmed at over 90 premises and has been found in more than 200 dead wild birds since the start of October. Christine Middlemiss, chief veterinary officer, said, "Many poultry keepers in England have excellent biosecurity standards, but we know that one small mistake is all that it takes to introduce bird flu onto the premises. A housing order alone will not be enough to reduce infection rates. Implementing scrupulous biosecurity and separating flocks from wild birds remains the best form of defence."
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the effects of faith. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the effects of faith in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Allah has said in the Quran that Ala bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul qulub, that let it be known with the remembrance of Allah there is a peace for the hearts. Therefore, the person who is a true believer, who is a faithful person, he has peace in his life. He never panics. He never gets upset for anything because he has patience in his life. Therefore, the one of the major effects or positive effects or advantages that we can see for being a faithful to reach to the level of iman is that the one who is faithful, he avoids the moral vices. So he avoids the moral vices. And this is one of the important things, that a person who is faithful, because this faith is connected to the ethics, believing becomes a believer, become a faithful, it is necessary that this person should follow the moral values. He is someone who is submissive to the moral values of Islam. Therefore, he avoids the moral vices. He avoids anything that is immoral. Therefore, He goes after the ethics, he goes after the moral values, and he tries to apply them in his life. When he's applying that in his life, therefore other people can see moral values from him, and they also start following him. The way we started to follow the life of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, because that was full of the moral values. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the effects of faith in the Islamic lifestyle. Therefore, we mentioned another effect that one of the effects and the advantages of the faith is that a person who is faithful, who gets the level of Iman, he avoids the moral vices. Therefore, when a mu'min, a true believer, when he sees himself in a place that there are moral vices, he avoids them. And the major issue today that we see in the society is that we see immoral values in the people. For example, lying is no more a bad thing in the society. Parents easily lie in front of kids and they learn from them. Parents very easily perform some immoral actions or deeds in front of kids and the kids learn them. In the schools, we have seen that the importance of the moral values have become, you know, we can say like it's become dim. Why? Because the children, the students at the school, they no more respect teacher the way they used to do. They no more respect the older or old age people the way they used to do. They do not respect each other the way they used to do. They do not care, or they do not care about each other the way they used to do. So all these things have come. Why? Because today we see that people, they just think about themselves. And Islam says that this is not the way you need to live. The way you need to live is to give importance to the others, to adopt the moral values, to avoid the moral vices in the society. And that's why Imam Ali alayhi salam also said that al-mu'minu, a believer, true believer, is man tahhara qalbahu, who purifies his heart from min ad-daniyya, who purifies his heart from the evil things, from immoral things, from the things that has no value in the life of the humans. Therefore, we must also be careful, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
Experts have warned that excessive economic aid of the European Union to Ukraine will cause some financial crisis for the European Union and may even result in its disintegration. High inflation, energy crisis, and weak economic growth have made many economic experts to compare the current situation in Europe with the oil crisis of the 1970s. While European countries and the United States expect to defeat Russia in Ukraine war with sanctions policies, Now they're caught in a severe economic crisis of their own. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of CNBC writes, City analysts said the euro area is at risk of a financial meltdown on the same scale as the crisis it suffered a decade ago. According to a report, Wall Street bank analysts have raised concerns about the violent bond market moves and the European government's plans to borrow vast sums of money. They say the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz's relief package, worth 200 billion euros, and aimed at tackling soaring energy prices, may soften the coming recession, but also poses risks for Europe. Those risks relate to the question of how the package will be financed and what that could do to inflation, to Germany's sovereign bond yields, to the European Central Bank's benchmark rate, and to the borrowing plans of other euro nations that may do the same. Citing Britain's recent bond market meltdown after unfunded tax cuts by the government, Christian Schultz, deputy chief European economist at Citi, told CNBC, "The risk is that others may follow that example." Christian Schultz explained that Germany could afford any debt financing thanks to its low debt-to-GDP ratio and lower external funding needs. But the package could open a door for less fiscally prudent countries to want to borrow large amounts of money and issue new debt. That could potentially lead to trouble, like we have seen in Britain. City analysts forecast that German debt financing could force tighter European Central Bank policy, which could also send yields surging in the euro area. Christian Schultz warned, "The risk is that this same dynamic, as we have seen in Britain, evolves on the European continent as well." Meanwhile, data by Saxo Bank shows that a European Central Bank stress indicator for the Eurozone's financial system, which looks at tensions in bond, equity and money markets, has risen from below 0.1 at the start of the year to almost 0.5 now. During the Eurozone debt crisis in 2009-2010, the index exceeded 0.6. Russia Today explains more about the same story. European Central Bank Chief Christine Lagarde revealed recently that Europe is facing lower-than-expected economic growth as inflation continues to climb in Europe, explaining that the European Central Bank had raised interest rates by 0.75 basis points in an attempt to control soaring prices. Speaking before the European Parliament's Committee on Economic and Monetary Affairs recently, Christine Lagarde admitted that inflation remains far too high and is likely to stay above our target for an extended period of time. The former International Monetary Fund boss, Christine Lagarde, warned that the economic consequences for the euro area of Russia's conflict in Ukraine had spiraled further since June, a reference to Western sanctions on Russian oil and gas, which have sent fuel prices skyrocketing. She said, "The outlook is darkening." While the Eurozone's economy grew 0.8% in the second quarter of this year, Christine Lagarde said the European Central Bank expected activity to slow substantially over the rest of 2022 to a total of 3.1% over the year and a mere 0.9% for all of 2023. She claimed things would improve marginally in 2024, with economic growth projected at 1.9%. While noting a decline in global demand due to what she called the worsening terms of trade, Christine Lagarde said much of this quarter's economic growth was due to strong consumer spending driven by reopening of COVID-shuttered industries like tourism. She said high inflation is being reinforced by gas supply disruptions, adding that uncertainty and falling household and business confidence were also contributing to the bleak predictions. Inflation hit 9.1% in the month of August, driven by energy and food prices. The European Central Bank has hiked its inflation projections accordingly, setting 8.1% for 2022, 5.5% for 2023, and 2.3% for 2024, with Christine Lagarde pointing the finger again at major disruptions in energy supplies. The central bank's recent 0.75 percentage point interest rate increase earlier this month was only the second hike in 11 years, after it added 50 basis points in July. Christine Lagarde said the increase would dampen demand but ensure that inflation expectations remain well anchored. Lagarde admitted the situation is expected to get worse before it gets any better, with regard to high energy and high food costs, the most important issues for 2 out of 3 Europeans right now. However, she urged governments to make sure fiscal support for the most vulnerable households were temporary and targeted so as not to exacerbate inflationary pressures. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has more on the same story. The European Union Statistical Office warned recently over 95.4 million people, every fifth EU citizen, were at risk of poverty or social exclusion in 2021. According to the latest data revealed by Eurostat, 21.7% of the European bloc's population lived last year in a household that experiences at least one of the three main risks of poverty: severe social and material deprivation, or very low work intensity. The number is slightly higher compared to 2020, when 94.8 million people, representing 21.6% of the European Union's population, faced similar difficulties. The statement explained, "In total, 73.7 million people in the European Union were at risk of poverty, while 27.0 million were severely, materially, and socially deprived, and 29.3 million lived in a household with low work intensity. Some 5.9 million people, or 1.3% of the EU's population, simultaneously experienced all of the three risk factors. Among the 27 European Union member states, Romania has the highest share of the population, 34%, facing poverty and exclusion. This was followed by Bulgaria, with 32% of the population facing poverty and exclusion. Greece and Spain, both with 28% of their people at risk, were in third and fourth positions. Meanwhile, the Czech Republic, Slovenia and Finland recorded the lowest shares of the population in deprivation, with 11%, 13% and 14% respectively.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghodde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith through action. Sunday, the 5th of Ramadan, 1394, the 22nd of September, 1974. In any case, it is over the course of many long years that the enemies have been working on the minds of the Muslims so that they say that Islam is not action. Faith requires no work. As long as there is love and faith and belief in your heart, there is nothing else you need to do. You don't need to move, to strive, to have an effect. It is years that they have been trying to convince of this. But what does the Quran say? It says loud and clear that they do not have faith. The Quran, Surah 24, verse 47. Those people who do not do what these verses describe, which we will continue to discuss tomorrow as well, are not believers. The faithful are those people who are with you, those people who are surrounded by Allah's grace, brotherhood, and submission, who are striving in the way of Allah in a way that befits their beliefs. They strive, they take action. This is the logic of the Quran. O you who have faith, bow down and prostrate yourselves and worship your Lord and do good, so that you may be felicitous. The Quran, Surah 22, verse 77.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
If you do these actions, you will be successful, happy, and saved. But if you had faith without bowing, prostrating, worshipping Allah, or doing good, then will you be successful and happy? You can clearly see what the answer is. And strive for the sake of Allah, a striving that is worthy of Him. He has chosen you. The Quran, Surah 22, verse 78. It is He who has chosen you, O community of Islam. What does it mean when the Quran says He has chosen you? Does it mean you have been set aside like precious pearls, that you are cut from different cloth? They sin, they err, they disobey our commands, and paradise has their name on it? This is what the Jews claimed at the time of the Prophet. They made the same mistake. Every Muslim has this same mistaken idea in their head. The Quran responds to the Jews who believed themselves to be God's chosen and beloved, or in fact the sons of God, by delivering a very sharp rebuke. It says that the chosen and beloved of God are those who obey His commands. Yes, O children of Israel, we chose you. God chose the nation of Islam, but before Islam He chose the Israelites. But both acts of choosing are one and the same. In other words, God chose the people best prepared for His most important mission.
That Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Addressing world leaders at the climate summit in Egypt, UN Chief Antonio Guterres says it's a moral imperative for rich countries to help vulnerable countries. Regarding that, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Taliban emphasizes that climate change does not know political borders, and countries which have no role in creating climate crisis have suffered the most damage and should not be ignored.
In recent 4 months, we have witnessed a significant rise in the number of natural disasters in Afghanistan. They include earthquake, flash flood, and drought. According to our assessments, almost 10 million people affected by these disasters need urgent help. We also need international cooperation to deal with impacts of such crises.
Afghanistan emits almost 0.1% of global greenhouse gases. But it is paying the price for growing climate chaos, mostly created by top emitters in the world. The results of climate change, including earthquakes, flash floods, and drought in Afghanistan, drive people towards hunger day by day. OCHA says 97% of Afghans could be too poor to survive without aid by the end of this winter, which shows a 50% rise in 2 years.
I would say 70% of people can't afford their basic needs. People have become poor. It has become much more difficult for many Afghans to buy food. And by winter, the situation would even get worse, I believe.
Previously, we had jobs and we could save for our winter. But now, I work only one day in a 10-day period. Some nights, we only eat bread with tea. We could use the aid if there were any.
According to the United Nations, Afghanistan is the sixth most affected country in the world, enduring the consequences of climate change. Immigration, job losses, and cropland destruction are the results of climate change. These problems are aggravated by recent political conflicts and severely impact the country's economy.
The devastating results of climate change have added to the problems Afghans are facing. International help for this winter could ease the situation for people already grappling with poverty. Abdullah Hamirzadeh, Kabul.
Iran has recently unveiled the newest version of its homegrown missile defense system, Bavar 373, which is said to have taken one step closer to the Russian-made S-400 anti-aircraft weapon system. During the test fire, a stationary target was detected at a range of more than 450 kilometers by the optimized radar of the missile system and was tracked at a range of about 405 kilometers and was hit at a range of more than 300 kilometers. The long-range missile has solid fuel and was evaluated during operation for the first time. The detection radar range of the Bavar 373 system has increased from 350 to 450 kilometers, and its engagement radar range has increased from 260 to 400 kilometers. The Bovar 373 long-range air defense system is capable of detecting up to 100 targets, tracking 60 of them and engaging with 6 concurrently.
All air defense systems are divided into 3 main categories based on their missions and operations, including long-range, middle-range, and short-range systems. Bovar 373 is a long-range missile system. Only 4 or 5 countries in the world have the technology to manufacture such a strategically important missile system. These countries do not even allow other countries to master such a technology, and if they provide any country with such a missile system, they will operate and overhaul the systems themselves, and operational and communicational codes are not given to the using country.
A distinguishing feature of Bovar 373 is its vertical launching system with square launchers, mostly used for air defense on warships. The system's missile range has increased from 200 to 300 kilometers, and its engagement altitude has increased from 27 to 32 kilometers.
The great achievement, which has been made as a result of the production of Bovar 373, aside from its defensive goals, is that this project has institutionalized the path of developing anti-aircraft air defense system inside the country. It means that we're now highly capable of producing any form of anti-air defense system inside the country with the help of our own universities, startup companies, and Iranian youth and specialists. By using Bovar 373 missile system, we can counter different types of missiles, bombers, and ballistic missiles.
The Bovar air defense system employs 3 different types of missiles to hit targets at various altitudes. It's been able to hit targets just 5 minutes after fire at an altitude of 43,000 feet.
Iran maintains that its military might poses no threat to regional countries, stressing that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence. Saman Kujurip, Tehran.
Supporters of former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan blocked the key avenues and roads leading towards country's capital Islamabad, causing massive traffic jams, halting logistics, and forcing schools and offices to close. Khan, who is demanding immediate elections, survived the assassination attempt last Thursday in the eastern Punjab province, leaving him wounded along with his several party workers. Police have arrested the suspected shooter and registered a case against him. However, Imran Khan and his supporters are not satisfied with it, demanding that Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, Interior Minister Rana Sanaullah, and a senior military official be investigated through a UN inquiry for their alleged involvement in the attack.
There's only one national leader whose name is Imran Khan. Everybody is behind him. We want free and fair investigation under United Nations investigation board.
The masses on the streets were irked due to the violent protest and road closures, asking authorities to end what they call the ongoing drama.
We are sick of such protest and unrest. Our lives and properties are not safe. Political parties should resolve their issues in the parliament instead of disturbing our lives on the streets.
While apologizing the masses over the current political uncertainty in the country, the government asked the PTI-led provincial governments in Punjab and Khyber Pakhtunkhwa provinces to play their role in opening the roads to ease the life of the masses.
I apologize to the people affected by Imran Khan's long march and protests on behalf of the federal government. We strongly requested the provincial governments to open the national highways immediately.
Khan's party has announced that its anti-government march will be resumed on Thursday at the place where Khan was attacked.
The recent attack on former Pakistani Prime Minister has deepened the political standoff between the government and the opposition. Experts believe the country's political atmosphere would be more charged and violent in days to come. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Petra Bas Lip is the mother of Alina Lip, a journalist whom the German government is trying to imprison due to her reporting in Donbass. Like her daughter, she has fled Germany to Crimea due to persecution. The government recently arbitrarily closed her bank account.
First her bank account, then her father's bank account, and last mine. So, yeah.
And what does that do, closing down your bank account?
What does it